My son's Mazel Tov has had the spin-off that I've come to Eretz Yisrael rather sooner than anticipated. And if you remember last time, obviously it was Hanukkah time, we discussed some problems about Hanukkah. And Baron has asked me this time to try to continue regarding the Megillah. When you say the Megillah, of course you refer to Megillas Esther. There are other Megillas, that's a subject on its own as to why these particular Sforim of Tanakh are called Megillah. They're all the Sforim of Tanakh, Chof Dalet Sforim. Why should these five be called Megillas? That's a separate issue. But the Megillah is quite clearly Megillas Esther. That is the Megillah, and it is the part of the, as you know, the Chof Dalet Sforim. There are a number of issues regarding the Megillah, and like any Sefer which is written with Ruach HaKodesh, with Nevuah, there are an enormous amount of hidden depth behind the actual Sefer itself. Whenever you do something, the first thing you've got to do is to look at the Sefer, learn it, but the second thing you've got to do is to see what's not there, what's missing. And to do that, you've got to be very, very astute, because very often people do things and don't realize that there's something not there. So, for example, if I were to ask you which letter of the alphabet is missing throughout the whole of Shemoneh Esrei and throughout the whole of benching, but only turns up on Purim, which letter am I talking about? You all daven three times a day, four times on Shabbos. You daven and you hear Chazaras HaShatz, and you bench very often, Shabbos three times, sometimes during the week. And you use the letters, the holy letters, the 27 letters of the alphabet, 22 letters and five finals. But there's one letter which you just don't use. Now, who's aware of what that letter is? Do I have a complete blank here? Sorry? I can't hear. Sorry. What's that? I appreciate the beta and the delta are not there, but that's because it's not Hebrew. I'm talking about, and there's no A or B in it, but I'm talking about the Aleph base. Which letter of the Aleph base will you not find in the whole of Shemoneh Esrei and the whole of benching? When I say the whole of Shemoneh Esrei, I don't mean the whole of Shemoneh Esrei. I mean the whole of the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. You will find it in Elkayin Netzor. That's a clue. What? You see, you've got. Let me tell you. Sorry. You've got to be alert when you learn. You've got to find not only what is there, but what's not there. I beg your pardon? Which what? So I'm not hearing. What is? I'm including the finals. Yeah, final fade. The final fade. But finally fade, we got that. You said it. Excellent. Now that you know that the final fade is not there in the whole of Shemoneh Esrei, it is in the, where is it in the Kain Netzor? Anybody? Come on. To Dof Nafshi. Well done. It's also in Musaf. You will find it in Musaf, because it talks about Musaf. Musaf ends with the final faith. But in the main Shemoneh Esrei, the three Shemoneh Esrei, Shacharis, Mincha, and Maariv, and in the whole of benching, you will not find a final faith. Now, those of you who learn Mishnah Berurah, you won't find the answer. But if you learn it, on top of the Mishnah Berurah, there is a sefer called Ba'er Heitev. You all know the Ba'er Heitev? On top of the Mishnah Berurah, you've got a Shaarei Teshuva, and you've got the Baal Heitev. Now, in the Baal Heitev, on Hilchos Birchas Hamazon, he says, why is there a bay missing? Because he says that anybody who benches with full kavanah, Meisir mimenu charoin af. The letter final fate, with a little aleph before it, makes af. A person who benches with full kavana will remove the charon af of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, why he says that in Birchas HaMazon and doesn't say it in Shemoneh Esrei, I have no idea. But that's what he says. But we know it's not in Shemoneh Esrei either, except in Elokai Netzar, it's there. And it is in Musaf. But there's only one. I think it's in Modim Drabonon. I think you'll find it too if you work through Modim Drabonon. But in the actual Shemoneh Esrei, it's not there. However, it does come in on Purim. Where does it come in on Purim? Sorry, I can't hear you. Speak up. That's in Modim Drabonon. Yes, I said Modim Drabonon. That's not part of the Ikkar Shemoneh Esrei. That's what we're saying that. Where is it in the? What do we say on Purim in Shemoneh Esrei and in benching? Taf v'noshim. Why on earth did they put the final fate in Shemoneh Esrei when it's missing from elsewhere? Well, look very briefly. The answer. My suggestion is that. Peh is the mouth. The peh is the mouth. The final fe represents the ending of prayer. It's the final fe, it's the ending. Therefore, since the Gemara says in Brachas, Levai she'odam she'espala kol hayom, a man should pray forever. He should never be able to stop praying. Therefore, they didn't want to put a final fe in because it would indicate you've got to stop. A faith so fit means the end of prayer. There's no end of prayer, so you can't in Shemoneh Esrei have it. Similarly in benching, you've got to have such HaKadosh HaTov that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you food to eat and were able to exist, that there's no end to the pay. But this only applies to where it's Tefillah or HaKadosh HaTov. Musaf is something different. Musaf is in connection with a korbanos. It's got nothing to do with the ending of prayer. Musaf has a finish. Musaf finishes when you brought the relevant korban, whatever the korban might be. Once you've finished with the korban, you're finished with the tefillah. So it has a finality, and therefore it does have a pay. Sorry? Hilula?
Oh,
Megillah. Yeah, hang on. But why is there a sof? That's the Megillah is the halal, but I'm talking now about the B'mei Mordechai in the Shemoneh Esrei. But the answer is this: normally you are chayev to be mispalel kol hayom, even if you're asleep, even if you're eating. There's no heter not to daven. You've got to be mispalel. However, there's one situation which you cannot be mispalel, if you're shikur. If you're a shikur, it's osur lispalel. And on Purim, chayev inish levesumi bepurim, you've got to get shikur on Purim. Okay, maybe yotze by falling asleep, but the ikar mitzvah is to be shikur on Purim. As soon as you become shikur, you cannot pray anymore. So Mimela, they put a final fate in the B'mei Mordechai to show and put him as distinct from all the other days of the year, there is a sof to the tefillah because you've got to get shikur. And that's why there's a... Sorry?
You can
pardon? Not if you're shikur. Lechachila, you've got to bench before you become shikur. But suppose also, if you can't...
The
Birchas HaMazon, it's not so poshut. If you've got no hakara at all, you can't bench. It depends on the level of shikrus.
But
they couldn't take the tafah. If you've already got to put the pay in for Shemoneh Esrei, you can't take it out for Birchas HaMazon, can you? Okay. All right. Now, I'm not saying that this is pshat. I'm just saying to you that you daven, you've got to pay attention. Now, let's move to the Megillas Esther. There is charon af on Purim.
The whole Purim was because there was a charon af.
Yeah, but you removed it, didn't you? Right. Removed it. All right. So you could learn like that as well. According to the Beiraitev, that you're saying that there was a charon af on Purim, right. Which at the end of the day, Kodesh Baruch removed it. So, maybe.
The door removes charon af for tefillah.
The door removes it, but not for tefillah. But then he doesn't. That's why he doesn't say it in the case of. Yeah. Oh, the point is, I'm not saying that what I'm saying is correct. What I'm trying to be ma'ira is, did you think about that before? And if you didn't think about it, why not? The answer is because you daven what's in front of you. You've got to watch out not only what is there, but what's not there. Now let's look at Megillas Esther. What's missing in Megillas Esther? The Shem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Excellent. Is there any other sefer in Tanakh where the Shem of Hashem is missing? Sorry, I know you learned Gemara, but the same still question. The Torah Shebiksav is also a chelek. There is another sefer in which it's missing, and that's Shir HaShirim. Unless you learn Pshat in Shalheves Yoh being Hashem's name, there's a machlokus between the Meforshim whether the Shalheves is the Shalheves core of Hashem or whether Shalheves Yoh it just means a flame. But the Shem Hashem, apart from that, in Shir HaShirim does not appear at all. In Koheles, the Shem Hashem also does not appear in the name of Hashem. Only Elohim appears throughout Koheles. Now, there are reasons for that. We're not dealing with Koheles or Shir HaShirim at the moment, but there are reasons why that happens. The question is, why is Megillas Esther without the name of Hashem? And on that, there's a lot of different explanations. The first explanation is mentioned, the Alkut Mamloz mentions it, I can't remember in whose name, he says that because this Megillah was going to be in the Persian library, Esther and Mordechai, they didn't want the Shem Hashem to be rolling around in Mongolia Avodah Zorah in the Persian library, and therefore Badavka, they wrote the Megillah without name Hashem being Meforish. That's one explanation. The usual explanation given is that because the whole of the Megillah is meant to be represent Teva, as if you could explain it away as Teva, but when it really was an S, it didn't want to put Hashem's name in it because that Hashem would show the Hashkocha Protis, it would show the miraculous nature. It just looks like a storybook without the Shem Hashem. In the recent war with Gaza, in a way, you've got the same situation. The miracles which occurred in Gaza are out of this world, and yet everybody thinks it was just natural. The fact that they could send about 80,000 different rockets, and if I'm not mistaken, only two or three fatalities occurred because of that. It's so miraculous that you cannot just push it aside and say it's natural. Of course people will say it's natural. Of course people will say it just happened that way. It wasn't a miracle. It just the Arabs didn't know how to shoot, and they shot in the wrong direction, and they didn't know what they were doing, and they're stupid, and all the rest of it. That's how they'll all talk. But the truth of the matter is that this was a modern miracle, very similar to what happened at the time of the Megillah. It's a miracle. And we've got to understand that the Megillah applies to all times, and the one of the reasons why Hashem's name is not mentioned in Mefarish is in order to, so to speak, mislead you into thinking that maybe it wasn't natural. However, if you look a little bit deeper into the subject, you'll find Hashem throughout. And there are a number of places in the Megillah where we know there is a remez that Hashem is there. Let's start from the very beginning. If you take the very first and the very last words of the Megillah, what are they? The first word is Vayehi. Is that right? What's the gematria of Vayehi? 31. What's the very last word of the Megillah? Zaro. The whole Zaro. What's the gematria of Zaro? 2, 13. Zion is 7, 2, 7, 2, 7, 2, 7, 2, 83. 283 and 31 is 314. Agreed? Got your calculators out, you can work it. 314 is the gematria of Shakai, one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the most powerful name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all have it on the mezuzah. which translates Shomer Dalsas Israel, but the Shakai refers to the almighty power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Is it not significant? Sorry?
It's 8, 3, 1, 4.
It makes it famous, it comes back to this number 8, this the net, which is Lamala Min HaTeva. It's all connected. So now, is it not significant that the whole of the Megillah is encapsulated by the Berderech Remez with Hashem's name, the power which is contained in this Megillah? Yet, what letter does the Megillah begin and end with? Vav. Now, Vav is the very opposite of miracle. Vav is nature. Number 6 is the limit of Teva. 6 is the limit to which you can reach. 6 days of the week, 6 years of the Shemitah. The number 6 represents the faces of 6 faces of a cube, which is the brick which you build. This number 6 represents Teva. We could know this because wherever you're talking about natural power, the number 6 will occur. The most powerful man in Tanakh, physically, among the Goyim, was a gentleman by the name of Goliath, in English known as Goliath. You've all heard of David and Goliath. Now, if you look at the measurements for Goliath, which are mentioned in Shmuel, he was 6 amos and a zeres tall. 6 amos tall. His clothing had 600 shekel of weight. 6 keeps occurring. But now Goliath was one of 4 gigantic brothers, all sons of Orpah. At the end of Shmuel Beis, we are told he had a brother called Ishbamadon, who was absolutely fearsome, far more powerful even than Goliath himself. His name was Ishbamadon. How is he described? Do you know how he's described, his power that he's described with? You remember? He's described as having 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot. That's how he's described. Now I ask you, does that make him powerful or does that make him a freak? Have you ever seen a person with 6 fingers trying to catch a cricket ball? It's much easier with 5 than it is with 6 fingers, I can tell you. The extra finger gets in the way. We were created in the most perfect manner. And a person's got an extra finger, it doesn't give him extra power, it just interferes with his strength and with his abilities. And yet, he's told that this man was even more powerful than Goliath, and we're told he's had 6 fingers and 6 toes. Why? Because there's a message. The message is this man reached the limit of Teva, that even his extremities were 6. That's the point of the number 6. So, we're seeing that where was he up to? The Vav, which represents power, the limit of Teva, the letter Vav has that in it, but it also has, it's the most powerful letter in the sense that it brings past to future. Everything looks natural. It's like the Hemshech of nature. That's what a Vav does. It turns past into future and future into past. It's a historic Vav. It also, it's full of all the droshes and all sorts. This letter Vav is very, very, very significant. But that begins and ends the Megillah as if to say, it's all a natural event. It's all just history. It happened and it will happen and it passed. Yet, we know the same words have Hashem's name in it. Now, if we go through the Megillah, the Medrash says that wherever the word HaMelech occurs in the Megillah, it refers not just to Melech Achashverosh, it's Malkoi Shel Oilom. Balailo hahu nodado shenas hamelech, nodado shenosoi shel malkoi shel oilom. How did the Medrash know that? Well, the Medrash knew it because it doesn't have to keep telling us hamelech achashveish all the time, and sometimes it just says hamelech by itself. Wherever it uses the word melech in the Megillah, that is telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the person who was the force behind what took place. So again, we see there's a remez throughout the Megillah that there is a Kodesh Baruch Hu there in the idea of Melech. But now comes the even more poignant message. You know that we have codes in the Torah. I'm not talking about the modern computer codes, they are there too. But in the Megillah itself, the letters Yud, K, Vav, K occur a number of times. They occur in different orders. However, they occur forwards and backwards. Now, when they occur, when I say they occur, I mean in consecutive words. I'm going to try to give you the exact location of these four these occasions, if I can find it. I need to look for it. Now, where is it? Should have it somewhere. Now, here we are. Okay. Here we are. There are four instances where you've got Yud-K, Vov-K, either going forwards or backwards, either in the initial letters or in the final letters. So you can have four consecutive words, four words following each other, with Yud-K, Vov-K on the beginning, or possibly at the very end of each word, or they might go backwards. Now, if it's going forwards, that means it's good. This is the right thing. Kadosh Baruch Hu is happy with what's going on. Something good is happening. If, however, it's going backwards, then that means things are not doing too well at all. Things have gone wrong. Because that's why Hashem is sort of put back to front, as if he's turning over what really we would want to happen. Now, Rabbeinu Bachya in Parshas HaZinu tells us in Chumash it occurs 18 times at least. There are, in fact, more times. But he says there are 18 times in Chumash. And whenever it occurs forwards, it's happy. So, for example, somebody just gets married. Noki Yiya Leveso Shono Achas. Last letters, Noki, Yud, Yiya, Hey, Leveso, Vov, Shono, the final letter. So that means that's something wonderful. A person who gets married, he's going to have a jolly good time. He's going to be fulfilling the wishes of our Kodesh Baruch. Things are going right. If, however, things are not going right, then it's back to front. You'll find the psukim where Kodesh Baruch is mahapich for nature, happened with the case of the Nochosh. In various cases, have a look there in Parshas HaZinu, you'll see he sets out all the 18 times it occurs in Chumash. Yes, you're right. In the Musaf, it's mentioned that there are some 12 different Sirufim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Each one has a different connotation. You'll find that in the Sidurim. And if you want to go month by month, each month has its own Siruf. And if you have a look at the B'nai Yisoschor on the month, he sets out exactly the details of how that Siruf works. Quite right. At the moment, I'm not talking about anagrams which are not in Keseda. I'm only talking about those which are actually Keseda. Yud-K, Vav-K forwards, Yud-K, Vav-K backwards.
So those obviously is one backwards.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Have a look and see which month it is. I'm not sure, I can't remember offhand which it is. Probably half, I should think. Sorry? I can't hear. It's backwards, is it? Could be. It could be. It fits, it definitely fits in. Now, let's look at the Megillah, though. Now, it says in the Megillah like this. If you start the chapter Aleph, Posuk Chof, it talks about He v'chol anoshim yitnu. Right? That's the first letter backwards. So in chapter Hey, let me get this right. Sorry, Chapter Aleph, Posuk Chof, it's got... No, I'm reading it back to front. Yitnu hiva chol anoshim. That's first... No. What's the Posuk say? Hiva chol anoshim yitnu. Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
Anyone got a Megillah in front of them? Have a look. Read that. Read the Posuk out. Yeah. Therefore, the Yud-K, Vov-K is written backwards. Right? So this means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not entirely happy. This was dangerous for the Yidden. Why was it dangerous for the Yidden? Because this was the start of Haman. This was the beginning of Haman's ascendancy. Therefore, it's very, very dangerous for the Yidden. So the Yud-K, Vov-K is written backwards at the beginning. If you go to chapter Hey, Pasuk Dalet, it says Yovo Hamelech Vahomon Hayom. That is Yud-K Vov-K forwards. Yovo Hamelech Vahomon Hayom. That was the beginning of the end of Haman. Therefore, the Yud Kei Vav Kei is written forwards at the beginning because it was the beginning of the end of the disaster. Haman was now going to be destroyed. So the Yud Kei Vav Kei is in the correct order. Let's go further. In chapter Hey, Posuk Yud Gimel, Kol Zeh Einenu Shoiver Li, that's Yud Kei Vav Kei backwards. That was the end, but that was the last time that the Yidden were in great Sakona. Kol Zeh Einenu Shoiver Li. Haman was having his last fling at the Yidden, and if he'd succeeded, the Yidden would have been destroyed. So the Yud Kei Vav Kei is written backwards, but at the end of the word, because it was his last go. And finally, in chapter Zion, Pasuk Zion, you've got Ki Cholso Eilov Horo'o. Haman was finished. That was the end of Haman. Therefore, the Yud Kei Vav Kei is written at the end of the words, because that was going to be the end of old Haman. So what we're seeing is there are four occasions throughout the Megillah where you've got Hashem's name hidden away in the wording, twice forwards and twice backwards. Once of those is at the beginning and once is at the end. And each time the Yud Kei Vav Kei occurs is telling you the message. If it goes forwards at the beginning, that means it's good for us. The beginning is working for us. If it's at the end, that means it finally turned out well for us. And also the vice versa. When it's backwards at the beginning, that means it is dangerous for the danger started off with Haman. And finally it finished. So what I'm saying is, these are remozim, but they are there in the Megillah for a purpose. Now, let's move on. There are all sorts of this type of remez running through the Megillah. I'm going to tell you a few of them. Some of them in the Mefarshim, and some you can find yourself, believe it or not. There is one number which keeps recurring in connection with the Megillah's Esther, and that is the number 54. You might ask me, what's 54? Well, 54 is the word Don. Don. Don means judgment. Now, we find that whenever Haman was trying to destroy the Yidden, he used the word Dom, not Don. And whenever Esther used the word, she uses the word Don. How's it go? It says, Kosav le'abdom. Abdom means to destroy them. But you could also take the last words, he wanted to destroy their blood. Dom is blood. Labdom. But whenever Esther talks, she's not out for blood. She's not a Hamasnik. She's not just trying to kill people. She wants proper justice. And she talks about Ovdan Moladity. Ovdan. Don meaning, I want proper judgment to take place. So Don is judgment, which is the words that Esther uses. Dom is blood, which is the words which Haman uses. Now, let's go further. How many times does the name Haman occur in the Megillah? Now, I've given you a clue. 54. Is that what you said? 54 times in the... Does that not tell you something? 54 times Haman's name occurs in the Megillah. I mentioned before, you've got to look not only at what's there, but what's not there. And that means looking at things which are a little bit off the main path. How many times does Esther's name occur in the Megillah? 54. Sorry?
54.
55. Now, what do you learn from that? I learned that in English is an expression, she went one better than he did. Is that not right? She did it. There is in the Rokeach, as if I play Dikar Rokeach, he says there were each 54 times because they were equivalent to each other. I don't know exactly what his cheshbon was. Our count, and I got the boys in school to sit down and count them, and 9/10 of them got 55. Somebody got a different number, but that happens when you get boys counting. You sit down and count, and you'll find that 9/10 of you will get 55, and somebody will get mixed up somewhere along the line. Anyhow, there were 54 for Esther and 55 for Haman. But then we decided we'd look at Mordechai. How many times did Mordechai's name occur? 58. So I was thinking, why is it 58 times for Mordechai? Now, I've got the answer. How many times has Haman got a nickname in the Megillah? That is three. He's called Memuchan, and he's called Mehuman. And Memuchan occurs twice. So twice Memuchan and once Mehuman, make 57. Mordechai goes one better than that. So it doesn't matter whether you use Haman's own name, Esther goes better. And if you, even if you use Haman and his nicknames, Mordechai goes one better. The Megillah is giving you a message. The Yidden will overcome the Goyim because HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be behind them, provided they do the right thing. Now, how many letters are there in B'nai Aseres B'nai Haman? Come on, count them all up. Well, to save you a bit of time, there's exactly 54 letters. If you count up the number of people, the number of letters in the Aseres B'nai Haman who are hanging on the tree, you will find 54 letters. Do you think that's an accident? Or do you think there's some real significance in it? Of course there's got to be a significance in it. That's clear, it's got to be like that. Now, so now that we know this 54 is so important, let's look at the most important posuk in the whole of the Megillah. And I say most important in the sense that we say it every Batsi Shabbos in Havdalah. The happy, the one of the four psukim which we all say aloud. Layodim, layodim, oisa, oisa, oira. Tell me, what's the gematria of the Rosh Tevis of that posuk? Layodim, oisa, oira, vesim, chovasafim, vikar. 54! Now, how did that happen? Layodim, oisa, oira, vesim, chovasafim, vikar. 54! Again and again we see it. Sorry?
5, 4, 9 is 2 miles.
5 and 4 is 9 is what?
1.
What?
2 above
Teva. 2 above, yeah. 9 actually represents MS.
Melech.
This is for cotton, is it? 4, 7, yeah, yeah, yeah. 9 is MS. 9 is the mid of MS. Yeah, there you are. Fits in. Thank you. All right. But let's stick to 54 itself at the moment. Now, the Vilna Gaon knew this, and he said, we're not going to say B'mei Mordechai V'Esther the way that you and I do it. Anybody davening in Nusach HaGro? If you look at Nusach HaGro for B'mei Mordechai, is there a Gro on Siddur here? Anybody got a Siddur HaGro here? Have a look at the Siddur HaGro. He takes out two words from B'mei Mordechai. We say, what do we say? We say towards the end of the B'mei Mordechai. Have you got a Siddur at hand? All right, let's have a quick look. B'mei Mordechai v'Esther, yeah, Shkoyach. It says here at the end, V'kilkalto esmach shavto. Vashevoso lo. Oh, this must be Nusach HaGro, this Siddur, is it? Vashevoso lo gemulo barosho, it says here. Now, there is another gisa, es gemulo al rosho. Let me just try and get that one right. Hang on a second. Wait a second, let me get this right. Lost it. I thought it was. But we, the Gaon changes the nusach in the B'mei Mordechai, so that instead of saying the one way that we do it, it changes it to the loshon. Of making it only 54, making 54 words. So if you count up the number with 4, 7, 9, 12, 15, 18, 20, 23, 25, 28, 30, 33, 35, 39, 40, 42, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 52. We've got 52 words, I beg your pardon. He changes it from Vashevoso lo gemulo barosho to Vashevoso lo es gemulo al rosho to get two more words, so you should have 54. So the Nusach HaGro changes the Loshon to make it two words more than we've got in order to get that number 54. And he says, this is connected with the Pasuk Hoshev Gemul al Geim. Haman was a big Balgaiva, as we know, And Geyim is Gematria 54, and that goes together with the same idea. Now, okay. Now, what have I missed out? Ah, yeah. Let me... I said this in London to a Sephardi rabbi, and he pointed out that in one of the Sephardi Sfarim, I don't know whether it was the Chidor, one of the Chidor Sfarim, or one of the others, he says, which Shir HaMalos in Tehillim would you say represents what happened at the time of Mordechai and Esther? If you look at chapter Kuf Chof Tes, it's not Kuf Chof Tes, it's Kuf Chof something. Is it Kuf Chof Aleph? Which is the one it's talking about? I'll find it in a second. Shir HaMalos Lulei Hashem Shehoyo Lanu Yom Ano Yisrael Lulei Hashem Shehoyo Lanu Kum Aleinu Odom. That's Haman. Azai Chayim Belaunu Vacharos Hapom Bonu Azai Maim Shetofunu. It's all telling us what could have happened to us at the time of Mordechai and Esther. Right, fine. Now in that chapter is the most unusual phenomenon. Who knows how many times the word Azai occurs in Tanakh? Not quite. In fact, outside Tehillim it never occurs. It occurs in Boaz Tzur, Azai b'mei Chashmanim. But in Tanakh, it never occurs outside this particular Mizmor of Tehillim. Not a single time anywhere is the word Azai seen anywhere in the whole of Tanakh, with the exception of this particular chapter. And how many times does it occur in this chapter? It occurs three times in the same chapter. It occurs like this.
Three in a row.
Azai Chayim Bula'onu. Azai Amayim Shtafunu. Azai Avaral Navshenu. And it's the only time in the whole of Tanakh. Now what's the gematria of Azai? 18. What's 3 times 18? 54. So I heard this from the Sephardi rabbi in London. He says that this Azai, one of the Sephardi Gedolim, as I said, could be the Chidor, says that this chapter, which is a chapter talking about Mordechai and Esther, has in it the remez 3 times Azai, which occurs nowhere else in all of Tanakh, in order to give us the message that 54 is this particular number which is so significant. Sorry? Is it? Yeah, but take Shir HaMalos out. If you take out Shir HaMalos LeDovid, because it's all, which is a, you don't count that. It's 54 words.
It feels like a
biblical
124.
No, you're overdoing it a bit there.
This is why it's talking about Mordechai and Esther, the whole story.
But you see, when you have a mizmah, you can take out the koteret, that's like the title. If you take out those three words, you end up with this magic number. It's actually quite remarkable. Now, let me tell you, since we're talking about numbers, it puzzled me for many years, what is the significance of Ahasuerus ruling over 127 provinces? What's the special big deal about how many provinces? Why tell us you had 127? It could be that was the fact. I mean, nice and simple. But why tell us at the very beginning? Now, the Alkut Me'amlo is... Sorry? Tell us the fact. You don't hear facts. Only relevant things. What's the relevance? What's the point? So the argument goes on and says that in fact there were 253 or 255 provinces, I can't remember. He sets out that, and he points out that Ahasuerus was in charge of half the world. Ad chatzi ha-malchus v'seos. He got up to half the known world at that time. But still, what's special about this number? Well, we all know the connection between 127 provinces and the 127 years of Sarah, the famous Medrash, that because Sarah lived 127 years, Esther was Zoicha afterwards to get 127 provinces, and the message, which is, of course, that Sarah, her whole life was given to service of Hashem, of Chesed and Torah, and therefore she was Zoicha to have a great granddaughter who got her reward of being in charge of 127 provinces. And that's a famous. So I remember Rabbi Miller from Levracha in Gateshead. I remember once he comes, we used to go to him for Musash Hashkofer Shmuz every week. He was actually in Reb in the Sem, in the Gateshead Sem, but we boys in the yeshiva liked to hear also what the Sem was learning, so we used to go to his shiurim. They were very, very fascinating. And one day, as we opened the door, he says, "Boys, would you like to own your own house?" I said, "Oh no, we own yeshiva, Bochum, how can we own a house?" He said, "I can give you a house for a minute's learning." A minute's learning? A second's learning, whatever it was. He said, "Well, very, very simple," he said. "It says in the Medrash that in the Zechus of Sarah, having 127 years of her life, Esther Amalko, she got 127 provinces. Now work it out," he said. "If it was 127 years for 127 provinces, countries, that means for each year she got a country. Now," he said, "in each country, how many counties do you have?" He said, "Well, about 12 counties in each country. So for every month, you're going to get a county. Now, in each county, how many towns are there in each county?" "Well, there are about 30 on average, 30 towns in each county. That means for every day, you're going to get one town." "Now," he said, "how many districts are there in each town?" "Approximately 24. So therefore, for every hour, you're going to get a district of a town." "Now, in every district, is how many streets are you going to have in every district?" "Approximately 60 streets per district." You know, you work out Shari Chesed, you've got Kanov, you've got Diskin, you count about 60. That means for every district, for every street, for every minute, you're going to get a street. "Now, how many houses are there on average in each street?" "Well, roughly, on average, about 60 houses in each street." "That means for every single second, you're going to get a house." "So every second of learning you're going to get is going to produce a house. All you've got to do is learn for a second, and you're going to be zoichet to have a house afterwards." "Boy," I said, "yeah, but it takes about 3,000 years to get it, doesn't it?" That was my response at the time. But then the message is clear. Still, okay, but we still haven't understood what is the special significance of 127, and it bothered me a lot. I knew the Medrash, and it's a nice chat. Then one day, I was walking down the street, and I remember nearly, there's a lamppost which is about, in the English lampposts are very, very tall, and I nearly jumped as high as the lamppost. It hit me just at that moment. Just like that. Because if you think, sometimes thoughts come to you, and the following thought came to me. Somehow or other, I was thinking, Ahasuerus was trying to stop the Beis HaMikdash at all costs. He says to Esther, "Archatzi Amalchus Seos, up to anything you can have, but you can't have Yerushalayim. I'm not letting you have Yerushalayim." He took out the kelim from the Beis HaMikdash and tried to wear them himself. That's what the very big Ches is doing in Chur, the big Ches of Chur. You remember at the beginning of the Megillah? Why? Because that Ches represents the 8 big day kahuna. He's trying to wear them. He took all of the spoil from the Beis HaMikdash, and the last thing he wanted was the Jewish people should go back to Eretz Yisrael and to have the Beis HaMikdash. So I thought, there must be some significance in this 127. He's ruling over 127 provinces. All right, but what's the significance of this? Then it hit me. When you bring Korbanos Tzibur, what are the groupings of the Korban which you bring? You bring either a Korban 1, the Korban Tomid is a 1, or you bring 2, like on Shabbos, Shnei Chavosim, or you bring in groups of 7, like Yom Tov. Sukkot is 14, that's 2 times 7, it's not really 14, it's 2 sevens because it's 1 for Sukkot and for Yom Narom and 1 for Yom Tov. 13 Purim, if you look carefully at Rabbi Shimshon Foyle Hirsch's explanation, he says the 13 Purim which were brought on Sukkot are not 13 Purim, it's 7 Jewish Purim and 6 non-Jewish Purim. And every day of Sukkot, one of the non-Jewish Purim drops out until you come to Hoshana Rabbah. There's no non-Jewish Purim left, because when it comes to Hoshana Rabbah, they will accept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech, Malchei HaMelechim, and the Goyim will also on a Shona Rabba, they will come to recognize the Malchus Shemayim. Therefore, you'll only be left with seven. So we see that the groupings of the Korbanos are either one, two, or seven. And I jumped for joy when I realized that, because that, I believe, is the significance at the beginning of the Megillah of telling us that he was master over 127 provinces. Achashverosh was trying to be master over the Korbanos. He didn't want the Yidden to bring Korbanos anymore, and that's what it meant when he was in charge of the 127 Medinas. It refers to the one, the two, and the seven of Korbanos. Might is a little bit far-fetched, but I'll never forget the day when I nearly jumped to the top of the lamppost as a result of that chap. But you see, as you learn through with numbers or other things, you can all find great depth in whatever goes on there. Another thing to look through is to anything which is out of the ordinary in the Megillah. Now, in the Megillah, you've got the Ches at the beginning, big Ches. There's one other letter which is big. Anyone know which that one is? No, that's a long. That's not. That's elongated. That's quite right. But that's not a vav. It's not a vav rabosi. That's a vav which is elongated. Sorry. Ishudi? No. The posik, it says vatichtov. The tof at the end is a tichtov. The tof. Tof and ches is well known. Have you ever heard of Gzeres Tachvatat? There was a terrible pogrom in the year 5408, known as the Chmielnicki pogroms. And the Megillas Esther is not just for the day it happened, it refers to the future too. So the Gzeres Tach is actually merumas in the Megillah, in the big letters. And there are fasts which were made because of this Gzeres Tach in the year, as I mentioned to you before, in the year 408. I'm sure you've all heard of the small letters. Everybody knows that. Does anybody not know that one? If you take the small letters of the ten sons of Hamon, you'll find there's a Tof, a Shin, and a Zion written small. You know about that one. You've all heard of that, surely. About the Nuremberg trials, which took place in that particular that time. So the small letters represent something disastrous which was going to happen many years later. Not so much disaster, the result of the disaster of the Holocaust. And the big letters represent the destruction of the community. These are the two biggest pogroms in the whole of history. But this is all just merumas there. But it's interesting that of these big and small letters, there's one letter which is written both big and small. There are not many big and small letters in the Megillas Esther. You've only got those which are mentioned. But there's one which is written big and small, the Tof of Vatichtov and the small Tof of Parshan Doso. Two of them. What's the significance of that? Well, in order to understand that, you've got to understand what the Tof represents. Sorry? The Tof represents the last letter of the alphabet. That's why the Tof is the Vatichtov. She wrote the last thing. But it also represents the number 400. And wherever you come across the number 400 in Tanakh or in Shas, you'll find there's a fight going on. The number 400 represents a fight. That's numerology. Each number has a significance, and the 400 represents that. Abameis Ishimo, in the case of Esav. In his Dazetra, Abameis Parso. It all seems to be a clash of ideology, where the Romans made the Chazir put its feet into the wall, and the whole of Eretz Yisrael exploded like an earthquake as a result. It's telling us that there was a complete culture clash between the Yidden and the Goyish culture. It seems to me that this Tof is also Mirambles that here as well. The Tof of Parshan Dosa is written small to show that the culture of Haman was completely smashed up. Haman was finished. His, because of the Teshuvah which Klal Yisrael did, the Parshan Dosa and all he stood for was demoted. The Tof of Atichrev is written large because that shows the culture of Esther and Mordechai. That was Le'elol Eila. It became bigger and it became it became more pervading. So you get the two Tofs represent the clash of culture, one which went down, which is Haman's culture, and one which went up, which was Esther's culture. That's a thought. There are quite a few more Ramos. We're running out of time. There are all sorts of interesting things in the Megillah. For example, you've got the longest word in the whole of Tanakh. You're aware of that? Yeah? The longest word, the longest pasuk in the whole of Tanakh is in Megillas Esther. Now, that must tell us something. There's got to be some significance in that. You don't know what they are? V'achashtarpim. Now, well done. That's an 11-letter word, which occurs there's only three 11-letter words in the whole of Tanakh. You look for the other two now. No idea where they are. Well, there are two more. One of them is in Esther. It's 11 words. 11 letters. There's the longest pasuk in the whole of Tanakh is in Esther, which has got 43 words. There's got to be a significance. The problem is that they're running out of time to tell you exactly what the significance is. But as long as you know what they are, you can then learn the pasuk and then try and work out for yourselves. Why is it? There's got to be an explanation. And there's no reason why you can't come to your own explanation. In halacha, you can't do your own thing. You've got to learn from your rebbes. When it comes to Agoda, you find in Shas that an Amora can argue with a Tana. You find very often an Amora argues. Not Pshat is arguing. In Drush, in Agoda, you can learn different ways. And the Rishonim will give their own Pshat. And there's no reason why, when you learn through the Megillah and you know the facts that you're looking for, you can't come out with your own chidushim, like I did with the 127. I haven't seen it anywhere. Well, you might not like it.
137.
Sorry, 127.
43.
43. How'd you get 137?
No, 43. 43.
Yes. 43. Okay. Yeah. Fine. Understand. Yeah. All right. But you got to stick to the. Yeah. Yeah, you've got to work it out. Now, perhaps let me finish with from Rabbi Weissmandel. You know Rabbi Weissmandel, who was the Chemed Moshe. He did a lot during the war to try to save Eden. He actually jumped off a train coming from Auschwitz. He was actually being transported to Auschwitz, and he jumped off the train, and he managed to escape. And he tried to do deals, and he was very, very upset with the Western powers, because he could have saved a lot of Yidden if he tried to get them to bomb the train lines to Auschwitz. He had a brilliant mind, an absolute genius of mind. And before computers, he came up with all sorts of interesting things. One of the things he came up with was the following. He said, the Gemara says, Mordechai min HaTorah minayin. That Mordechai min HaTorah minayin, as the pasuk says, Mordechai rekinim and besem, and the targum of Mordechai is Miradachia, which is the letters Mordechai. That's what the Gemara says. So everybody assumes it means the fragrance. Mordechai was so fragrant; it was so beautiful smelling. Esther min HaTorah minayin, Shlem Aster's pona, Haman min HaTorah minayin, Haminoetz. Okay, there's a lot of mephoshim to explain what the Gemara's deeper meaning is, but he came up with the following chiddush. He says, he counted up that there were 12,110 letters in Megillas Esther. I must confess, I haven't counted them myself, and I'm not sure that the computer actually backs this up. But this is what he said. He said there are 12,110 letters in the Megillah. If you count from the mem of Mor Doror, 12,110 letters, you come to a resh. If you do it again, you come to a Dalet. If you do it again, you come to a Chof. And if you do it again, you come to a Yud. Now, this was a man who did not have a computer, although he had a computer brain. He says, when the Gemara says, Mordechai min HaTorah minayin, he says, it is inscribed in the Torah, Mordechai's name, at a gap of 12,110 letter intervals, which is the size of the Megillah, the length of the letters in the Megillah, and therefore it's proving you that it's divine. Now, I don't know how many of you have done mathematics and the law of probabilities, but it must be one in billions to be able to come up with that sort of solution. But it doesn't finish there. He says, in the case of Haster Aster with Esther, you can't start from the Aleph of Aster Aster. Do you know why? Who can tell me why? Why can't you start from the Aleph of Haster Aster? Where is Haster Aster? Sorry? It's at the end of Devarim, end of Sefer Devarim. If you go 12,110 letters, you go off the end of the Chumash. So you can't start from there. I didn't think of that, and he didn't think of that. He said, he said, you've got to start from the Aleph of Bereishis. If you start from the Aleph of Bereishis and do the same process of 12 to 1110, you come to a Samach. And the Samach is a very rare letter. And very, very much rare. I mean, the probability is increased so many more times to get the Samach. And then you do it again, you get a Tav, you do it again, you get a Reish. So he said you can see that the Megillah is written with divine Ruach HaKodesh because it ties up with what happens in the Chumash through the codes. So, as I don't take no responsibility for that one because I haven't checked it personally. But this is what he writes. But what we're seeing here is the Megillah is absolutely full of these type of messages. The length of the Megillah in Psukim ties up with Amalek in, if you take the number of words in the two parshas are Amalek, that's the parsha in Parsha Zohar in Kisaitse and the parsha in Beshalach, and put them together, you'll find it comes to the same number as the Psukim in the Megillah. And there are things like that which are just mind-boggling. The Megillah is so holy, it's so full of Kedusha, it didn't happen just by some author writing an essay or writing a beautiful novel. It's written with such Kedusha, there's such depth in it. It's a question of opening it up and finding it out and revealing it. I'm going to have to stop now, but I hope that between now and the laying of the Megillah, you realize how much there is still to unravel from the depths of the Megillah's Esther. Okay. Go ahead.